Football Weekly is on the air.
Here's the snap.
Drops back. Throws the ball. The long ball downfield.
Down the sideline. Breaks the tackle. He's still going. 50, 45,
40, 30.
He's getting the ball away.
Runs left to the 20, to the 10, to the 5.
30. Strikes into the end zone.
Touchdown.
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 This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkush. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly, an in-depth look at professional football this week. Coming up, the aftermath of Super Bowl 48 and what's ahead for the new champions.
What's the future of more Super Bowls in cold weather cities? Will there be more teams in the playoffs and more teams overseas?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Welcome to our postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush, and we're joined by our regulars, Arthur Arkush of USA Today Sports Weekly and Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports. Arthur joins us in these opening segments of the program here today, and let's start again with Hub, the Super Bowl wrap-up. You think about it now, Pete Carroll started talking about it within 24 hours after the Super Bowl victory, about next year and about defending the title, et cetera, and all that. But the Super Bowl wrap, your impressions of the Seahawks and the aftermath of that Super Bowl.
Well, there's no denying the dominance of the Seattle Seahawks. There's no dispute they were the best team in the National Football League in 2013. And there's really nothing all that different and fancy about the way they did it. They used the time-tested and true formula. Defense in the running game wins titles. You'll supplement it with the occasional pass play. Be real good on special teams. And that's it. You know, as far as the Seahawks defense, should it be discussed in the conversation with some of the great defenses of all time? My position would be no. No, not yet. I mean, it's a very young defense. You're not talking about any franchise players necessarily. Maybe Richard Sherman or Earl Thomas become that, but you look at the other nine starters on that defense, and they're all kind of movable parts. And so I think it was a great scheme. You know, they're athletic, they're fast, they had a fantastic season. They played an incredible game in the Super Bowl. But, you know, Arthur, I look at them, and I'm still not convinced the 49ers in their own division aren't the better team. The Arizona Cardinals can play with them. There will be other teams that will challenge them. They certainly are not, to me, a team that I start to think dynasty right away like we have with some of the other great Super Bowl winners.
You make an interesting point in saying that perhaps the parts are not as great as the sum. I think you mentioned the scheme and how innovative it is and how innovative John Schneider and Pete Carroll had been finding a new mold for their bigger, faster secondary and doing some of these things. So, you know, I would tend to agree that there's not a ton of star power. I mean, I know these names are becoming more recognizable, and certainly they're going to have an opportunity to build on this great Super Bowl success, and they do look like they have a great young nucleus. But in terms of starting to compare them with some of the dominant defenses, the 70s Steelers, the 85 Bears, I don't think they're there yet, but certainly the opportunity is alive and well for them.
And, you know, guys, the glow of the Super Bowl champion, everyone, you know, starts talking about them as they are invincible, as they just appeared to be a few short days ago. But everything changes year to year. I don't care how many people they bring back. The Seattle Seahawks will have to rebuild their team like everyone else will from the ground floor up. Now, they do have some people who are going to be free agents, key free agents. Michael Bennett, the defensive lineman, Breno Giacomini, the offensive tackle, Golden Tate, very fine wide receiver, Stephen Hushka, an outstanding kicker. So they've got some people they have to sign up.
Yeah, I think the key guys are Hushka. They do not want to let him get away. He would be the golden toe, the best kicker in the NFL in 2013. Michael Bennett and Giacomini are interesting because they're valuable starters, but they're guys who were just plugged in themselves, and I'm not sure that the Seahawks are going to break the bank to try and keep them. What they've got to focus on right now, Arthur, is sometime in the next 3 years, and particularly next year with Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, they don't want Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, and Earl Thomas getting away. Well, right there could very well end up being 20-25% of your salary cap in just a couple of years. I don't think they're going to spend a ton of money on a Michael Bennett or a Breno Giacomini or even a Walter Thurman. Hushka, to me, is the one guy they want to be sure they get back.
And I think it's a great point. We have seen, as we discussed a little bit, Schneider and Carroll's ability to locate that personnel to really assemble a dominant roster. Now the difference is going to be how they're, you know, find ways to keep it together. You said they've still got a few more years before they really have to address Russell Wilson. Richard Sherman, another guy that's going to command big dollars. We'll see how they're able to sort of massage the salary cap. I agree Hoshka needs to be back. I think that the franchise tag is a good option with kickers. That could be the route they go. I think Michael Bennett and the force that he provided, the presence that he provided from the interior really makes him a guy that they're not going to be able to afford to lose. We saw how that pass rush affected Peyton Manning the way it did in the Super Bowl.
All right, guys, the Denver Broncos, they also have some decisions to make. And, Hub, this was a roster that had some age on it in that by design. I mean, John Elway, with a lot of the injuries they had, decided to replace veterans with veterans, some of whom came off the street. They do have some key free agents. No Sean Marino, the running back. Wesley Woodyard, the linebacker. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, if I'm not mistaken, was talking about retirement. Eric Decker is a big key at wide receiver for this team. Sean Phillips, Zane Beatles, Chris Harris. You know, he's a restricted free agent, is Harris. But they've got decisions, too.
Every one of these guys important starters. Now, Harris coming off the ACL as an RFA, they're not going to have to worry about that. I don't think they're going to have any qualifying offers. They'll tender him, and they'll have to worry about him next year. Arthur, Wesley Woodyard cannot get away. You know, we talk about Danny Trevathan and Woodyard. They're two great young linebackers, and they're going to want to absolutely bring Woodyard back. I understand Wayne's point about Eric Decker, but when you've got a Demaryius Thomas and a Julius Thomas at tight end, and at least at this point you've still got Wes Welker, I'm not sure they can afford to spend a lot of money on Eric Decker. I think Sean Phillips is the one other guy they've got to spend some money on because he was the pass rush this year, and who knows with Von Miller. He got off to a slow start after coming back from suspension, then the ACL. I'm sure he'll be back. I'm sure he'll be good, but I don't think they want Sean Phillips to get away.
Yeah, I'm with you wholeheartedly. I mean, I think the focus has to be on defense. Obviously, the offense was stifled by Seattle. They're not going to face Seattle every week. I think the offense is going to be just fine. You get guys back like Ryan Clady. You have the continued develop of the Thomases and some of these other guys. I think Noshawn Moreno and Eric Decker may have both priced themselves out of returning to Denver. On defense, I think all these guys really need to be back, especially with the Chris Harris injury and kind of the uncertainty that surrounds him. He was so good for them pretty much all season before going down. I think you got to find a way to bring back Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, too. He did back away from some of that silly retirement talk that we heard early Super Bowl week. He kind of the glue of the secondary moving forward. I think you need to find him, and you need to continue to find pass rush. Even with Von Miller coming back, Sean Phillips seemed like another indispensable guy for them most of the season.
Is there another cold weather Super Bowl in the relatively near future? We discuss when The Way We Hear It continues on Pro Football Weekly. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly. I'm Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush, and we're joined as always by Arthur Arkush of USA Today Sports. Hub, from the Super Bowl week, I know you were there and you attended the commissioner's State of the League address, and among the topics, and there were a lot of interesting ones, and let's pick out a couple here, but let's start with cold weather Super Bowl sites in the future. Okay, they got away with one. It was 50 degrees or thereabouts in the Meadowlands on Sunday. Of course, the weather had the last laugh on Monday, and hardly anybody could get out of New York, but nonetheless, cold weather, open-air Super Bowl site. Is there another one in the near future?
I don't think so, Wayne, and it really intrigued me listening to the commissioner. You know, he talked about what a success, this was on Friday at around 11:30 Eastern time, what a success he felt the New York-New Jersey Super Bowl 48 was. But when asked specifically, would they do it again, he said, we're not ready to go there yet. And as a matter of fact, he didn't seem that incentivized to do it again. I think this was what it was. Any city that spends hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in public funds to build a new stadium pretty much gets a Super Bowl as a reward. New York was just the latest, and they did it without the roof. That was the unusual part. Remember, Detroit and Minnesota only got theirs for, only got their second one for the same reason, but they had a roof on the building. So my sense from listening to the commissioner is no, they had enough angst and concern going into this that they're not going to be in a big hurry to try this again.
For the NFL to be promoting this wide open passing NFL league, you know, where points are what everyone wants to see, it's kind of speaking out of both sides of your mouth to say we're also going to, you know, subject this biggest game on the planet to all these elements. We know they had a lucky horseshoe that, you know, where the NFL, that is, you can't count on that every year. I expect them to stay away from this plan.
How about adding teams to the playoffs, Hub? What was your feeling based on what the commissioner was saying?
Wayne, it's interesting. I got the exact opposite impression from the commissioner on this one. I think he is very upbeat about the possibility of adding more playoff teams. He talked specifically about just adding one more team from each conference. That would give you 14 playoff teams in total. Only the number one seed would get a bye the first weekend. You'd have three games in each conference, or six games, and then by the time you got to week two, you'd be back to your eight remaining teams in the divisional playoffs. Now, personally, I hate the idea because there's already bad teams in the playoffs, and you're guaranteeing that you're going to add two more best-case average teams. They're going to be below the 12 that we've already been getting, and I don't know that there's tremendous demand for a triple header, basically, is what you'd get on the Saturday and Sunday of the first weekend of the playoffs, particularly if you get mismatches. But, Arthur, that does appear to be the direction that the league is headed in, and I think it could happen as soon as 2014.
And I'm with you. I think it's a mistake. And my biggest fear is it's going to trivialize the regular season, just like it has in the NBA and the NHL, where it's kind of a watered-down playoff pool. All we have to do is look back to Week 17 and all the AFC teams that didn't want to find a way to win, hovering around 500, even to get into the playoffs. The thought of an 8-8 Steelers club going up against a Broncos or a Patriots or just an AFC team that is a clear cut ahead, to me, it doesn't exactly promote the greater excitement for the fans that Roger Goodell is looking for. I think it would be a mistake.
How about the London venture by the NFL? More games over there?
Well, again, this was interesting. Yes, there will be three games in 2014 for the first time, and the commissioner was strong on this. He said, we're really excited. All three games are already sold out. The next question he got from a member of the international press was, well, what about a permanent franchise in London? He said, I have no idea. We're not thinking about that yet. I don't know what the next step is. I've gotten the impression from listening to him in the past that he was very high on the idea of putting a team in London. But, Arthur, I think he's starting to realize that that could create all kinds of competitive disadvantages for the 30, well, however many teams would be left in the States.
You know, I know that the ticket sales initially for the three games next year even exceeded expectations. It seems like the demand is there. I personally think bringing a team there for a 16-game season would not be met with that same type of demand. And then even the bigger picture, as you mentioned, is the competitive disadvantages that this creates across the board. One of the most interesting ones is finding players who want to go play for a expansion team in London. I think it would be much, much more difficult to lure in free agents, both in the offseason and also in a weekly basis when you need to try out guys and make sure you're maintaining your 53-man roster. I think it would be a major problem for an NFL team in London.
Hub, one last point in this segment. Class action lawsuit by the retired players stalled. What's next there?
Well, the commissioner took a step back and said that he doesn't think that the stall is that big a deal. He thinks it's procedural. He still hopes that the settlement will go through. I think he may have been doing that one with blinders on, but that's his position. And legally, he's not incorrect. These are boilerplate type technicalities that the judge has looked at so far in sending people back to their clients and saying, I want to make sure that this is right. But it was clear reading between the lines that the owners need this settlement, because if they don't get it, and it doesn't look like they're going to, they're back to square one with tremendous potential liability on the table.
Stay tuned. We'll discuss new coaching blood in the NFL when we resume on this postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish, and we're joined by Arthur Arkish of USA Today. Coaching changes abound around the National Football League. Guys, let's start in the NFC North. Mike Zimmer, a good fit in Minnesota, Hub, from what you've seen?
You know, Wayne, I think he's a guy who's ready. Nobody really understands how he got passed over as often as he did. He's a very good defensive coach. Players will absolutely go through a brick wall for him, and it is his time. I think the fact that he was able to add Norv Turner as his offensive coordinator is kind of the magic ingredient. We don't know what Zimmer knows about offense, but we know what Norv Turner does. He also brings a tremendous amount of head coaching experience, and together they should make an excellent team. Arthur, what's more interesting is what are they going to do with this roster? Where, you know, I think before you get a guy like Zimmer, you know, you look at guys like Jared Allen and Kevin Williams who are free agents and say they're gone. But my guess is that Zimmer may want to make a push to keep him around.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think even more maybe in the case of Kevin Williams, who still proved to be, you know, they were both productive, but I think Jared Allen has become a little bit more one-dimensional at this stage of his career. You know, I love the Mike Zimmer hire. I think he is ready as well. I think he's had consistently one of the most well-coached defensive units in the league. I think he always gets a lot, perhaps out of less than some other teams, maybe not so much in recent years in Cincinnati, but over the span of his tenure there. And that's what they're looking at in Minnesota. They need an infusion of young talent on defense. I think that bringing in North Turner on offense is going to help a lot. There's a lot of nice pieces there. Of course, they have to get the quarterback position filled, but when you've got an Adrian Peterson, still the best running back in football, and you've got the exciting Cordarrelle Patterson and guys like Kyle Rudolph, who should work so well with North Turner. We know what he gets out of tight ends. I think the focus has to be on defense, and this is a once proud franchise when it comes to playing defense. They need to get back to that, especially in this division, the NFC North, with so many powerful offenses. And I just, I praise the Vikings, and I think it was nice to go against the grain a little bit and get the best coaching option out there, even if he is a defensive mind.
Lions turned down by Ken Whisenhunt, and they turned to Jim Caldwell. But Hub, he may be just the right fit for Matthew Stafford, the mercurial but very talented quarterback.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one because he clearly was not their first choice. Everybody thought that Ken Whisenhunt was going to end up in Detroit. We know that Marty Mayhew had talked to Jim Caldwell, that there certainly was interest there. And Caldwell's an interesting guy. I mean, he takes over Tony Dungy's team and gets him to a Super Bowl, gets beat by the New Orleans Saints, and then it starts to come apart. 10-6, his second year, still a playoff team. But then the complete disaster as soon as Peyton Manning was gone. Now he's taking over a team that needs reorganization, needs maturity, needs some control, a firm hand. And Arthur, one of the things that was said about Caldwell in that last year in Indianapolis when things were coming apart is that maybe he wasn't tough enough on his players. That's what makes this such a curious fit. Certainly the guy who did as much as anybody to develop Peyton Manning should be a good fit with Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, you would think so, and I think you made some interesting points otherwise. I mean, if you're looking for the opposite of Jim Schwartz, they certainly found that in Jim Caldwell. You couldn't find a more steady hand, if that's what they're going for. I think it's interesting, but it's kind of hard for me to sell this as a better option than Ken Whisenhunt. It clearly was their second choice. Ultimately, it is going to come down to what can he get out of Matthew Stafford, and we do know he has a track record in terms of, working with quarterbacks. We'll see what happens there, but you also have to remember there were some other real questions about Jim Caldwell in Indianapolis, some real game management concerns. You'll remember just the absolute mind-boggling timeout he took in that Jets loss, Peyton's last loss in the playoffs with the Colts. So he does still have a lot of things to show. I do like the way he's assembled his staff. He's got two former coordinators on the defensive side of the ball, so I don't think experience is going to be an issue under him.
I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Washington. Jay Gruden gets that job under Daniel Snyder, the owner.
Yeah, this one really fascinates me, Wayne, because there's so much. Look at Jay Gruden and what he did with the Cincinnati offense in 3 years. That was the kind of the storyline as people said he's ready for a head coaching job. What did he really do with the Cincinnati offense in 3 years? Yeah, they were better at times this year. He's credited with developing Andy Dalton, but Andy Dalton is one of the biggest question marks in the NFL right now. He threw 20 picks this year in the regular season, and he has come apart in the first round of the playoffs each of the last 3 years. A.J. Green makes a lot of guys look good. I like Jay Gruden. I don't have a problem with this, but when you look at all of the other more accomplished, more seasoned head coaches who have come apart, if you will, under Dan Snyder, Arthur, I don't know what Jay Gruden's going to do with him.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is a huge question mark. And, Dan Snyder can say as many times as he wants that he's not going to meddle within the organization. But it was, clear as day to see what happened when he started giving, preferred treatment to RG3 and the rest, how things sort of fell apart and came apart at the seams there. So a fascinating hire. My biggest concern here is as explosive as that Bengals offense was at times, it was also puzzling as well. Washington clearly looked built to run the football. That's something that Jay Gruden didn't always do in Cincinnati, even when it seemed like it was obvious times to call for it.
How will new coaches fit in Houston and Cleveland? We discuss when Pro Football Weekly returns after these messages. Welcome back. Along with Hub Arkush, I'm Wayne Larrabee. We're joined now by Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports. And guys, new coaches in the National Football League. Let's talk about a couple in the AFC. Down in Houston, the Texans went ahead and hired Penn State head coach Bill O'Brien. He's the new head coach now at Houston. The high-profile hiring of O'Brien also led to the hiring of Romeo Crennel, the former head coach at Cleveland and Kansas City. and he will take over the defense down in Houston. Hub, talk a little bit about this and what this means for the Texans.
Well, you know, every time this comes up, I can't help but think of the San Antonio Spurs after their first NBA title. David Robinson got hurt. They were horrible. They got the number one overall pick in the draft. That was Tim Duncan. They came back and won a few more titles immediately. The Houston Texans will be a playoff contender this year and could go deep in the playoffs. They're going to get back a healthy Arian Foster. They're going to get back a healthy Dwayne Brown. They had the number three defense in the NFL and went 2-14. I don't know how you do that, but they did somehow. It all came apart for Matt Schaub at quarterback. They've got to fix the quarterback position. There's no guarantee yet that Schaub won't be back. I think they've realized that Case Keenum, TJ Yates are not the answer. They'll probably bring in another quarterback, maybe a veteran and a youngster. But other than that, Eric, I mean, to me, this team is ready to go right now. It is interesting, you know, Wade Phillips coached the number three defense in the NFL, and yet they didn't consider him bringing him back. I don't know if that was a Bill O'Brien, Wade Phillips chemistry thing, but of course, Bill O'Brien and Romeo Crennel know each other from their days. Well, actually, they don't. They did not coach in New England at the same time, but they know each other through their mutual contacts there with the Patriots organization.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit more bearish on their situation just because of the quarterback uncertainty. I mean, they got the number one pick, and it's very likely they could use it on a quarterback. But boy, I mean, they need a right tackle. They need another pass rusher. The interior of the defensive line probably needs fixing. And I'm a little worried about Romeo Crennel's system. Those five techniques are asked to kind of hold blocks, and that's not really what you want J.J. Watt doing necessarily. I mean, I think he's their best playmaker too. So I'm curious to see how it all works out. I do think Bill O'Brien has the good mentality to turn this thing around in short order. I just don't know if they're that Super Bowl contender we thought they were heading into the 2013 season.
All right, guys. Cleveland was the last to fill its vacancy. They settled on Bill's defensive coordinator, Mike Pedden, Hub. And what do you make of this?
Well, first of all, in fairness to Mike Pedden, he's a pretty good football coach, and clearly they got to him by default. Usually you concern when a team hires its second choice as their head coach. Pedden was their fourth or fifth choice, and there's no hiding that. They can deny it all they want, but everybody knows what was going on there. But again, he's a pretty good football coach. He did a nice job under Rex Ryan in New York for a number of years as the defensive coordinator. He went to Buffalo last year with Doug Marrone, and the first year really had that defense turned, was one of the best pass rushing teams in the NFL. He's one of these motivating, hard-ass type head coaches the players love to play for. So that could work out okay. What bothers me, Eric, is that Jimmy Haslam, the owner, and Joe Banner, the president of football operations, are running such a clown show there in Cleveland that I don't know how Pedden's going to overcome it. I mean, are they now going to step back, get out of the way, and let Mike Lombardi handle talent and let Pedden coach? Or are they going to continue to make a mess of things because the Rob Chudzinski thing was embarrassing enough, and now this coaching search, well, they kind of ended up as the laughingstock of the league.
Yeah, and, you know, they're letting a lot of, I don't want to say house secrets, but they're being awfully chatty from what I can tell. And, you know, a lot of reports coming out about the team and what they're thinking is as far as the draft is concerned. And, you know, the whole thing about Kyle Shanahan, he interviewed poorly according to sources, and then he gets hired as the offensive coordinator. So to me, it sounds like some parties are not on the same page as others. And whether that's an ownership front office thing or the new head coach with Pedden there, I don't know. But, you know, they have a lot of issues on offense, and Shanahan's going to be a key figure, and whomever they draft a quarterback or trade for a quarterback is obviously going to be in a lot of pressure because, you know, let's face it, it is a pretty good defense, and I think Pedden's going to have this group playing well, but offensively they're a mess, and maybe up top in the front office they're a bit cloudy as well.
And Wayne, one other thing to consider here, with Joe Banner constantly meddling, and he's not a football guy, he's a bean counter who ended up running a football operation. There could be a lot of pressure to draft Johnny Manziel. I know people think that the Texans are going to take him. I don't think they will with the number one overall pick. There are scouts out there who believe he is a first round prospect, maybe even a top 10, top 15 prospect. But to me, he's not that clear cut franchise guy. And yet you could have Banner pushing Pedden and Mike Lombardi for the wrong reasons to bring in a Manziel. And if they screw up this quarterback thing one more time with a first round pick, it's too much at some point.
Yeah, exactly. New look in the front office of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We take a look when our postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. We continue with this postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly. Again, coaching changes abound in the NFL this year. In Tampa Bay, Lovie Smith takes over not only as head coach, but he's got a lot more on his plate than just coaching this football team, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, Wayne. And I'm going to kick this one over to Eric pretty quickly because I know Lovie fairly well. And, you know, personally, I'm fine with him, but I have some biases as far as an NFL coach. I think he's a really good coach. You don't coach 9 years in the league and go 18 years over 500 without being a pretty good football coach. His problem is that he's a terrible evaluator of talent, and he doesn't handle his coaching staff and his locker room all that well. So I understand the Glazier family saying, hey, maybe Lovie Smith's the guy to turn this around. But that's under a strong GM who's going to have complete say over talent and maybe even help with the hiring of assistants. Eric, when he went out and hired Jason Light as his GM and Jeff Tedford as his offensive coordinator, I immediately said to myself, this is the Bears all over again. They're going to play very good defense. They're going to beat bad teams, but they're not going to do well in the draft, and they're not going to have a great offense.
Well, I'll be curious to see who has the bigger say. You know, I mean, Jason Light is a first-time GM. He's 42 years old. He's been in the league a good amount of time. He has, you know, a background in New England, a background in Philadelphia, two teams who had head coaches with personnel say. You know, that's kind of an interesting thing. However, he did oversee a very good draft in Arizona last year. He was with the Cardinals the last couple seasons. So, you know, I think he has an eye for talent. Now, can they get on the same page and pick the right players? That's, you know, that's kind of what I'm wondering. And some of these parts on defense, I don't know if they exactly fit what Lovie, you know, wants to do with that group. They don't have the pass rush up front. Are they going to go for one of those older DNs like Jared Allen or Julius Peppers? I mean, there's some familiarity there with Leslie Frazier and him, but boy, I don't know. I like the talent in this team, but I think there's some ill-fitting parts and there's some big decisions to make.
Meanwhile, the Tennessee Titans went with Ken Whisenhunt. You know, and again, you look at their situation, Hub, Jake Locker, the quarterback, is he the guy for that job? And what else is going on that has led the Titans to, I guess, perform at less than expected rates the last 2 years?
Yeah, here's the interesting thing about both these teams. Just one other thought on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They don't have any significant parts that they're worried about in free agency. You look at the Titans and the group that Whisenhunt is taking over. Alteron Verner is one of the best-kept secrets in the NFL. He's probably a top six, top eight cornerback. He's a free agent. But other than that, Tennessee's in pretty good shape. The big question I have here is who are the six cancers that tight end Delaney Walker talked about on the radio at the Super Bowl? Will Ken Whisenhunt be able to identify them immediately, and will he be able to cure them or to cut them out? You know, because that's kind of what you got to do with cancer. And it's an organization that was a bit of a mess. You know, obviously Mike Munchak, highly thought of as a coach, was considered for several other head coaching jobs. Very active pursuit of him to take over the offense of line with a number of teams. So Ken Whisenhunt, Eric, I thought was probably one of the two best options available with teams looking for a head coach. He and Bill O'Brien, I might have leaned towards Whisenhunt. Some people would take O'Brien. But I look at what he's taking over here. Now, he does have some history with Rustin Webster, who's the GM there. And Webster's done a nice job of finding talent that is a little bit off the radar. I think you got another owner here who probably doesn't know what he's doing in Tommy Smith with the passing of Bud Adams. But this one of all of them is the most fascinating to me because I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what Whisenhunt's walking into.
Right. I mean, like you hinted at, there are some key decisions to be made. And I think one of those cancers very well could have been Chris Johnson. I think they're going to cut him this offseason. You know, does that mean you leave Sean Green as your top back? Do you stick with Locker one more year to see if he can develop, you know, and hope that Whisenhunt's magic touch like he had with Rivers last season, like he's had with other quarterbacks in the past, can rub off on Locker? Those are big issues, you know. I think Kenny Britt's probably gone. So there's going to be some new faces on offense. You know, I think the offensive line's going to see an overhaul. They're probably switching to a 3-4 defense. This screams of a last place kind of season with all the changes they're going to make here, but there at least is an infrastructure of some interesting talent. That secondary you mentioned, some D-line talent looks pretty good, but boy, I don't know. I still have a lot of questions about this group, and I wish it was a little more solid, like you said, as much as I like Whisenhunt.
And Wayne, here's what's really interesting to me about this one, is that, you know, I think Lovie Smith is expected to get some wins immediately in Tampa. I know Bill O'Brien is down in Houston, probably Jim Caldwell in Detroit. Ken Whisenhunt took the Arizona Cardinals to a Super Bowl. He did a really nice job there. It didn't work out because Rod Graves couldn't get him the talent. He went to Tennessee because he trusts Webster. There had to be a promise here that you've got a couple years to get this done. And so I think Eric just nailed it. I think they're prepared to be really bad this year. Not that they want to, but if they have to be, the time to watch the Tennessee Titans is going to be 2015, 2016, once Whisenhunt and Webster have their program in place.
All right, the NFL and marijuana. That's next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We continue with Eric Edholm, staff writer, Shutdown Corner, YahooSports.com. I'm Wayne Larrabee, along with Hub Arkish. Well, the NFL, I talked about it as the lead-in to this segment, the preview, so to speak, or the tease, if you will. Marijuana and the NFL. You know, it's already legal in a couple of states in the lower 48 hub, and I wonder, is it going to become legal in the NFL anytime in the near future from what you heard at the Super Bowl?
Well, Wayne, the reason that there was so much conversation about it at the Super Bowl is exactly that. It is legal in two states in this country, Colorado and Washington, which happened to give us the two Super Bowl contenders this year. Roger Goodell was asked, as we suspected he might be, at his State of the League address on the Friday before the Super Bowl, and he gave a pretty firm no. He doesn't see the league's position on marijuana changing anytime in the near future. He said that the league will go where the medicine takes them and that the league's doctors are still telling them that they're a long way from being able to say that, A, marijuana does have benefits in terms of helping players heal, cope, whatever it may be, and, B, that they still believe that it is also a gateway drug, that it is illegal in 48 states and therefore most of the country. And so, Eric, I don't think you're going to see the NFL changing its stance on pot anytime soon.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously, it's not going to change before the national law is changed or anything like that. But, you know, it is interesting to hear from guys like Jets cornerback Antonio Cromartie, who said NFL should let its players smoke. And then you've got, you know, Ryan Clark from the Steelers saying a lot of his teammates do, and they do it as a pain relief thing. I mean, and, you know, watching the recent Real Sports report about the former Broncos tight end who tried Vicodin, didn't like it, but then switched to marijuana and said, hey, it helped me, you know, and I think it's going to help a lot of other people if they open their eyes to it. Other studies have shown maybe there's a link between pain relief and marijuana. Again, I'm with you. I still think we're a long way away from it, but I do think the NFL is more open to this idea than they probably were 3 or 4 years ago. And people, I think, are starting to change their opinions on this, sort of just based on the temperature I've taken of the league in the last 6 months or so.
And, you know, Antonio Cromartie said, hey, listen, if they whether it's legal or not with the teams, the player's going to smoke it anyway, Hub. That was kind of surprising.
Right.
Well, it was surprising that Antonio Cromartie could say something that dumb until you stop and realize who it was who was saying it. I mean, you know, guys, I wonder if maybe somebody's going to show up to test Antonio Cromartie when he's not expecting it. He's right. We know it. And, you know, and in fairness to the NFL players, it's not NFL players. It's young males in America of that age. A lot of people smoke pot. We understand that. Maybe it should be legalized. I don't have an opinion on the subject, but for Cromartie to come out and say it, that was really dumb.
The biggest midseason controversy, of course, involved the Miami Dolphins. Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito, the bullying story that engulfed the Miami Dolphins for a while. The report is still a few weeks away. Hub, what do you expect? What do you hear on this?
Well, I understand that Steve Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, apparently has already seen the report or at least been told what's in it. I don't think there's anything earth-shattering that's going to come out of it. It is going to be embarrassing for some of the people, both still with and formerly with the Dolphins organization. But what was interesting was that Jonathan Martin chose Super Bowl week to finally show up and speak in public for the first time, did an interview with Tony Dungy, insisted that it was bullying and that he wants to play in the NFL again. Following that, the Dolphins ended the suspension of Richie Incognito. That's just a formal, you know, bureaucratic red tape type issue since he's not going to be back with the Dolphins. He is a free agent. Incognito responded by saying, I support Jonathan Martin. I think he's my friend, and I hope he does well in the league. So very good move by Incognito, Eric. I don't know that we heard anything from Martin that really changes the story at all.
Well, yeah, and then Incognito, after that really sort of nice touch that I'm sure was prompted by people in his camp, sent out another tweet talking about some kind of, you know, salty lyrics and mentioned Ted Wells' name, the independent investigator. So I quickly deleted the tweet, probably realized he was going to get in trouble. But in this day and age, people screen grab that thing and it's been making the rounds. So apparently he's not too happy with what Wells had to put in his report, or at least what he's aware of.
Yeah, he probably didn't come out looking too good. Rams eyeing Los Angeles, San Diego commits to Qualcomm at least one more year. What's going on here on the West Coast? Who's going to beat who to L.A.? Somebody's going there, aren't they, Hub?
You know, when the story broke while we were in New York for the Super Bowl, that Stan Kroenke, the owner of the Rams, had just completed the purchase of 60 acres of land in L.A., people immediately started trying to make 1 and 1 equal 2. It may equal 3. Stan Kroenke's a billionaire real estate developer. He could be building a strip mall. He could be looking at property for a stadium. Eric, we do know that he's not making a lot of headway in St. Louis with improvements to that stadium or getting a new building, and it's a story that won't go away. And then it was exacerbated by the fact that the Chargers, also thought to be looking at Los Angeles, did agree to stay in Qualcomm in San Diego at least one more year, so the Rams are the team everybody's watching right now.
Right, they've got 1 year left on their deal, and if you know that area that he bought, the 60-acre plot, it's right near the old Hollywood Park. It's right near the Forum. It's near a million different highways. There's restaurants, parking nearby. It would be an outstanding place. Just saying, it would be an outstanding place for a stadium if one wanted to put one there.
Yeah, and they're not running the ponies out there anymore either.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, they've got room for it. Stay tuned. Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Here's this week's Publisher's Pen with Hub Arkush. Hub?
Well, Wayne, much to my surprise and the surprise of a number of other veteran NFL media covering the Super Bowl, and particularly at the commissioner's State of the League address, I really thought that there would be a focus, possibly even a questioning and inquisition of Roger Goodell about the issue of traumatic brain injury, concussions, what was next in the NFL, because it has touched so many different aspects of the game. You've got the lawsuit, the multi-billion dollar class action lawsuit brought by now almost 5,000 retired players. You've got the changes in rules that have questioned the quality of the officiating that have players now saying they're targeting knees. Will there be more changes to avoid the targeting of knees? What is really the next step for the NFL? And there were two things that jumped out. One was the commissioner saying pretty emphatically that he wasn't worried about the fact that the settlement had been stalled. He still thinks it's going to go through. The legal experts I've talked to aren't so sure. More than that, the agents of individual players I've talked to have said they're going to do everything they can to make sure that the settlement does not go through. They want to protect their clients' rights to pursue damages and pursue, you know, some type of compensation on their own. But the other even bigger issue, which I find particularly interesting, is a study that came out that said concussions were down 13% in the NFL this year. And when asked why, Roger Goodell immediately, without hesitating, said, because we're protecting players better because of the rule changes. But that didn't make sense to anybody, because when you look at the concussion protocol now, what they're doing is they're looking more closely for concussions. You would have expected they would have diagnosed more, not less. There is nothing consistent going on in the National Football League right now to suggest that they have any answer to the dangers of traumatic brain injuries that football causes. The rule changes may or may not be helping, but they are causing problems for the players playing the game. And the NFL still has a huge problem on its hands one season later that they don't appear to have answers for.
Thanks very much, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Randy Meyer is the producer-engineer of Pro Football Weekly. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush, Eric Edholm, and Arthur Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.